Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak and Beers.
Brother!
This is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paladin.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host, Brad.
Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
Happy Suzuki here with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican, built tough for all situations. Go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com.
Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. I'm your host, Sean. Susie is not able to join us tonight. I'm hoping that she should be back next week. So for any of you guys wondering where she is, she sends her best, and hopefully she'll be back next week. But that being said, I have an awesome guest tonight. This gentleman I've been fishing with a little bit lately. He's a local guy to me, so we fish a lot of the same waters and a couple of the same tournaments, although pretty much every tournament I've been in with him, he's kicked my butt. So we'll talk to him a little bit about that. And without any further ado, I'd like to bring on tonight's guest, Mr. Jordan Welliver. Welcome to the new show, sir.
How you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us tonight. For those of you guys who may not know you, we have a worldwide audience pretty much, but mostly here in the States are our listeners, but we do have a few people out and about. But for anybody who isn't familiar with you, why don't you let the folks know who you are, kind of where you're from, and we'll talk a little bit of how you got into fishing and kayak fishing.
I'm Jordan Welliver. I live pretty close to the Susquehanna River, pretty much a central area to any of the Susquehanna that I'd want to fish.
I was going to say, what got you started into fishing? Have you been one of those guys who fished ever since you were little, or more like me where, I started way later in my life?
I always fished a little bit, not serious. And my dad is by no means a fisherman, so I had no leader in that aspect. Probably about 5 years ago, I started working for a guy that makes all kinds of soft plastics. And it put me kind of in a good position because he has had a boat and a glass boat. So anywhere we wanted to go fishing, he's been there. He knew where to go and we could go catch fish anywhere. So that kind of got me started. And I actually got into the boat world up until last year. I never even really kayak fished, like maybe down a creek or something like that. And then I seen the Hobie tournament and I seen what the payouts were. And I was like, wow, that looks like something I need to get myself into. So I went, bought a kayak, and got into a little bit. Didn't buy a phone tether. Probably should have been something I got to, because I caught a 19 1/4 2 minutes into the first kayak fishing event I've ever fished and dropped my phone in the water.
If you fish long enough, you're probably going to do that. I have a feeling I have come close. I've actually fished my phone out of the bottom of the river before I went and got a tether. But luckily, when I dropped it, it was like 2 feet, and I could see it there and was able to just get it. But I know, believe me, I have, as my listeners definitely already know, I have lost my fair share of gear to the river. The guy who started Paddle and Fin, Brian, just at our Dale Hollow event last year, I lost a $300+ combo of his that he let me use, and just kicked it off the front of the kayak. So I have definitely threw some money into the water for sure.
It's not hard to do, man.
For sure. No, I've lost Oakley's. I've lost, I probably shouldn't even list. If my wife listens to this, she's not going to be happy. So, but yeah, let's safe to say I have, gave my fair share of bounty to the depths for sure. But so you jumped right into Hobie events, or you had a few smaller events you did before you got into the Hobies?
No, I had no idea about kayak anglers or anything of that nature. I knew the Hobie event, and that was it. Wow. I did measurement tournaments before, but just like the weekend ones where I could be on my boat. Okay. I never even pre-fished out of my kayak. Like, I just went to that event saying, oh, I'm a boat guy. These kayak guys are going to be way, way, like, behind compared to boat guys. No, that wasn't the case at all. But I was actually way behind because of the tether situation. So,
yeah, no, unfortunately, that will put you down a little bit. But once you did it, started with the kayaks, did you like fall in love with that? Or would you still like to go back to boats someday? Or just, kayaks is where you want to be now?
Every weekend. Last Saturday, I fished on the North Branch in my kayak. Sunday, I was in a boat.
Okay.
I have a boat also. So I pretty much, if it came down to it the same day, I'm going kayak. I'm in the kayak.
Okay.
But so far, there's only been one event that I had to even do that to. And it was honestly probably not worth it in either way, but I donated that day. So,
well, I donate a lot, and I'm sure I've donated to your winnings at least a little bit in a few of these. So, but yeah, let's talk a little bit about how your year has gone. I know you've definitely had some good finishes, at least following on Facebook and seeing, some of the things that I've seen. But take us through how your year went so far.
So over the winter, I kind of just tossed around the idea whether I was going to go full bore into it this year and fish all the Hobie events and stuff like that. And that was 100% my plan.
Okay.
And then I came to where it was, I got to sign up at 12 o'clock on this day or I'm not making signups. And I just kept I just didn't sign up. Like, it honestly wasn't really a thought in my mind. So I just knew if I 100% in my heart didn't want to do it, then I should probably stay local one more year. I was hoping to win AOI in something, whether it be Kayak Anglers, PA Bass or something, but I only showed up for one PA Bass event.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also due to boat and kayak on the same day and drive 4 hours to go fish somewhere I've never fished before, or go fish where I know I have a hard time leaving the Susquehanna, that's for sure.
No, and I
had.
Go ahead.
I had some middle of the road finishes pretty much all year. Like every tournament, I was mid pack and not really putting it together. And then pretty much right before the Hobie or right after the Hobie, I took 18th at the Hobie.
And yep, then, I see that nice big check in the background.
Well, no, I had to make sure that I took 18th. I took 18th at the Hobie and then followed that with a fourth. And I pretty much had good on both sides, kayak and boat. The ending to this year has been kind of giving me back some of the money I've donated. I won an event on Saturday, which was it's my favorite place to fish that I've never pre-fished in my life. I showed up on tournament day last year and I did good, so I went back again this year and put it together, just not with the same strategy I had last year. But overall, I wish this is how my season started versus how it's finishing out, because it's given me confidence, but I finished last year out very well too. I just need that June, July, August solid finishes that I struggle with a lot.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And you're saying that when we were talking before the show, that this time of year is your favorite time of year to fish. Obviously you have a lot of confidence with this, this time of year. What do you think changes? Is it this time of year just fits better to you, the type of techniques and tactics that you like to use better than maybe the kind of midsummer months?
No, I'm still throwing the same bait the same way. It's just I don't care where you're at. If you're fishing 83, 84 degree water, these fish they're being lethargic. They don't want to go out and kill something. I mean, you get your few and far between, but your morning and nights are your best time to fish. And a lot of times it's hard to capitalize in that hour long, 30 minute long period right in the beginning of the day, and you don't get a night in a tournament. So
right,
you pretty much got to make do and grind out the rest of the day. You still catch a lot of fish. I just have a hard time in a kayak. I have a hard time catching them midday. In a boat, when you're 6-7 feet higher, like not level with the water, and you can stand on a cooler or whatever, you can sight fish. That's my favorite way to fish. But in the fall, the water's cooler, they're more active.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to eat, well, they obviously eat way more, because the fish I've caught in the last 2 days versus the fish that I was catching 2 months ago, they're half a pound heavier.
Oh yeah. I was just joking with one of my buddies. He asked me how I did yesterday, and I was like, I caught the chunkiest 11 and a half inch bass that I ever caught in my life. That thing was heavy. I was like, for a 11 and a half inch bass, I was like, oh my gosh, that thing is a beast. But yeah. And all the fish that I'm catching right now, you can tell they're really starting to feed up. Just last week, we kind of did my show on the fall feed up and how this time of year is a great time to fish. And it's, you know, right now it's proven to me, you know, exactly that. You know, I went out on Saturday and did pretty good, and I went out last night and didn't catch numbers, but the fish that I did catch were good, so for the most part. But I know you're actually doing some tournament prep for a big tournament that's coming up. I wanted to kind of just mention it on here. You don't have to give away any secrets or spots or anything, but the tournament that that's coming up in our area, again, it's on the Susquehanna. It's I forget what the boundaries are. They're similar to...
It's the same exact boundaries as the Hobie. I just think the Juniata might be like something different about the Juniata.
Okay. And I know on our kayak anglers tournament that we fished on the Juniata, that's where I caught my biggest fish of the year. I had a 21-inch bass up there. And I missed out on big bass in that tournament by like a quarter of an inch. I was so, when I caught that fish, I was like, oh, I got big bass. Nobody catches more than 21. And then Mike Reinhold, the guy who runs our local chapter, had a 21 and a quarter. I was like, oh, are you kidding me? But yeah, so that the Juniata was nice to me when we were up there. So I wouldn't be surprised if, especially now that the water is up again, or at least halfway up, more than it was for the Hobie event. You know, I think that could be good.
Oh, absolutely. Anywhere where bait's pushing to right now is...
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Definitely the way they're moving, for sure.
But I wanted to mention to the folks a little bit about this tournament, because it's a little different than your average tournament. It's actually, who's putting it on? I forget. I don't know.
Native,
that's right. And so it's actually, they're paying out $1,000 each hour of the tournament for big bass for that hour. So if you catch the biggest bass for that hour, you get $1,000. And it's $100 entry fee, if I remember correctly. And they also, there's definitely prizes for overall big bass, and then the normal, bag that is the biggest. But the payouts for the hours, if you take 2 hours, you're easily won more than you did if you take the whole tournament, I think, right? It's pretty close.
Actually, every bass over 14 inch counts.
That's right. So yeah, if you can put up numbers, which is, yeah. So if you then it's a numbers game for the total, but then every hour, like you said, is biggest bass too. So there's all sorts of ways to win. It sounds really interesting to me. I was 100% for it until I found out I have a wedding that day. So I'd have to get off the water at like lunchtime. So I'm kind of still up in the air about whether I want to do it, and it's coming up rapidly. So I'm going to have to make up my mind. I mean, to me, it's almost worth it to fish at least a few hours in the morning and see if I luck upon at least one good fish. Would easily make it worth it, but you never know. So we'll see. I'm still, like I said, still up in the air. But so that brings me to the kind of topic that I wanted to talk about tonight, and that was kind of how you do your tournament prep. Because I know, like I talked to you a little bit before the Hobie event when we were at the captain's meeting there. And you seem to have a really good plan, and I'm definitely still kind of totally a noob when it comes to planning. I definitely didn't do a ton of homework. I didn't have a ton of time to pre-fish. I live, in the Wrightsville area, so I know my section of the river really well. But north of Harrisburg, I've fished a few kayak anglers tournaments up there. But other than that, I really hadn't fished it much, and so I was definitely kind of a stranger in a strange land heading up there to fish the Hobie. I kind of more did it just because I wanted to kind of meet some people and just to say I did it. I didn't have any expectation of doing well, especially against the caliber of anglers that were in that event. But I still had a ton of fun, and it definitely taught me that I definitely need to learn more about doing my homework and preparing or getting a plan together. So that's why I was curious about, kind of what all goes into your planning process and how much pre-fishing plays a plan into that or part of that. I know you said you've definitely fished tournaments where you haven't had experience, and you think that How do you think that relates to how you did in those tournaments?
It's kind of a double-edged sword for me, because you can go do all this pre-fishing. The fish are in the water. They can move. They can move. I've done this numerous times this year alone. Like, you catch them the week before, or go catch them a day before, catch three fish and three casts and say, oh, this is a great spot. And then go back there and you get in your head right away, oh, I caught the only three fish that was there, and I thought there was more there. Mm-hmm. Or I did that actually pre-fishing for the Hobie. So I don't know. I going in blind, you have a clean slate. You're only going to know what you learned that day during that tournament, and it can be beneficial. Like, I fished new water this weekend, and I had no expectation. I told my buddy in the morning, like, you see this area right here? I'm not leaving it. Well, 25 minutes in, after I fished all three of these things and didn't catch a single fish, I was like, well, I'm going for a ride upstream. And I just pedaled upstream till like 2.5 miles until pretty much I knew, well, I started seeing people above me coming down, and I was like, I didn't fish that hard enough to want to just keep going and go fish the water that the four or five people I seen fish when I know I was the only. So I just switched tactics and went back downstream. But I like to go out and catch fish in different areas that set up similar, or like the same amount of current, or as many little eddies, or like maybe same rocks, same style ledges, and kind of just see what I can pick up on that the day before. That way I know I'm not hurting anything that I'm planning on doing.
Right.
And then time of year plays a lot into it too. Like right now, covering water's definitely something that's key.
Mm-hmm.
And the more water you cover, the more time you're, more chances you have at catching a big fish.
Yeah, no, and I know the last event that I fished with you, right towards the end of the tournament, you blew by me a few times back and forth, and I was like, man, he is covering water, and I'm just poking around. Maybe I should be paddling more. But yeah, you were like, I remember chatting with you real quick, and then you were gone, and then you were coming back up by me again, and I was like, whew, he is flying.
You caught a bigger fish in the end than me. So.
Right there, at that spot I did, but but that was actually the biggest fish I caught all day. So that made me wish I would have kind of stayed down towards that end a little bit, because I went way far up and didn't catch anything, and then caught all my fish down at the bottom end again. So.
Yeah, I picked up on that. I actually stayed after that was over. I went down three launches. Like, I fished another 7 hours after it was over.
Wow.
And I do that when I venture down that way, because that is unfamiliar water for me that always wins. Like, it's not if it will win, it always kicks me in the dirt. Like, I start out so good, and then I just scramble to get the last bite, and I really, really want to learn that area a lot more than I have.
Well, that area really threw me for a loop, just because I'm so used to the ledges down in Wrightsville in my area running perpendicular to the shore. They run across the river, but up there the ledges run parallel with the river, and yeah. I was like, how the heck do you even fish this, you know? Because like on my ledges, the current hits up one side, and then so you have a fast side and a slow side. But there, the current's running right along the ledges, so it definitely was a little bit different for me fishing there. So,
yeah, I always do good. I went there in my boat and fished like that whole area. I did so well, and then I just went back in there. My buddy's a guide. We took his boat out. We caught like 98 inches or something like that in 3 hours the one night. I'm like, oh, this is legit. Like, I really like this area. I go back, and plus there's so much down there. It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
To like, you pretty much got to stick with one side of the river and just run with it, because I'm always zigzagging, and then 3 hours gone by and I look upstream and I'm 80 yards down from where I started, and it's like it's tough. That's for certain.
It does. And I've had that conversation on this on my podcast before too with a lot of people, and that's, I think, one of the challenges with the Susquehanna is that it is so huge. There is so much water to fish. Trying to isolate it just down to a little bit. Now, again, once you know your section of the river, like I know the Wrightsville area, I know generally what holds fish and what doesn't. So I can eliminate, even though it's a mile wide, I can eliminate, you know, 3/4 of that and say, you know, yeah, there might be a scattering of fish here and there, but I don't need to fish that because I know, you know, it's not as good as these more, you know, the high percentage areas, if you will. And I'm sure on your end of the river, you probably know kind of the same things, you know. So, and that's where I'm always jealous of, almost a little jealous of the people that fish the smaller rivers, because there's just not that much area. Like, I feel like if I would fish those areas, I could do really well, because I'm going to cover everything just because I'm used to covering so much water.
Yeah, I always wanted to go down and fish the New River.
Mm-hmm.
This one guy, I talk to him all the time, and he's like, you got to come down. That's like, I want to, because this sounds mean. That's for certain.
Well, and the only other real place that I've fished far away is, you know, Paddle and Fin does a meetup at Dale Hollow every year. So I fished there. Now, both times I fished there, you know, they always say, oh, it's, you know, a world-class fishery. And I was like, finally, I'm going to some place that's, you know, supposedly comparable to the Susquehanna, and I just didn't fish well. I did okay. I caught a few big fish last year, but just not as many as I was thinking. You know, I'm expecting to go there and just absolutely slay fish left and right, and it just didn't happen.
That's my expectation for every place I go to.
When I was talking to you about the Hobie event before that, I was mentioning how, you know, I was nervous, and, you know, that was my first real big event, and you seemed to have a really good, you know, head on your shoulders, and, you weren't letting it get to you at all. You're just kind of confident in your plan, and you kind of, you know, I definitely was a little envious of your mental game, because it seemed like you were a lot mentally, I don't want to say tougher, if that's the right word, but you definitely seem more confident than I did, for sure.
Yeah, when you go and you catch 94 inches in 20 minutes right at daylight pre-fishing, it does make you pretty confident. But this, I just learned one thing. I had no expectations of doing that again.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew if I went back both days, I was the first person to post the limit, and I had 85 and 83 in the first 15 minutes both days.
Wow.
So I knew that that place was capable of that, but I didn't have any type of idea what was going to go down. But I just, day two, I honestly had no expectations and kind of just grinded it out. And it worked. It worked better for me in the last hour than it did both days after 7 o'clock. So
Well, yeah. And that's evidenced by the check that's sitting behind you, because I think I finished 160th out of however many, and you were much, much, much higher. So, you know, your mental toughness proved to help you, I think. But you had a good game plan, and you knew kind of where you wanted to go and what you wanted to do. And I was the exact opposite. I was kind of pretty much shooting from the hip 90% of the time. And I think that showed in how I fished, but, I'm definitely kind of looking forward to, I don't know if I'll do it again next year. Well, what do you think? After your finish, I would think if they do come back to the Susquehanna.
I plan on fishing. I plan on making it to the TOC this year or awesome. Next year, whether it's through AOI finishes or I have to do it through a top three, which either way, neither of them would upset me, but that top three would be a lot cooler. Plus, kayaking's becoming a bigger and better thing every single season. Like just from last year to this year, I mean, I haven't been around long enough to see where it was 5 years ago, but just seeing where it was last year versus where it is this year, like my buddies that don't kayak fish don't even hardly fish. Like if they fish, they fish with me. Mm-hmm. They know, like, oh, did you see so-and-so's video on at this lake? Like my buddy knew about that stupid bug thing that Nolan Miner was throwing before I knew about it, and he seen it on YouTube. It's like, so there, it's cool that it's getting bigger, and I don't know what Hobie is planning on doing next year. I have an idea, but it could be a definite game changer if it's what I'm thinking they'll do. And I think it'd grow the sport a lot more.
Okay.
But just from last year, I was tossing around whether I was even going to fish the Hobie. And I signed up like the Tuesday before signups were over. This year, there was no such thing as that. I knew. Oh, yeah. I was actually on the river sitting there at like 11:50. I sat down and I'm sitting there like watching the time. And then I get the please click five stoplights. And I'm, or mountains, that mountains or hills. And I'm sitting there like looking at it. I got so mad because my buddy texted me. He never even used Tourney X before. He's like, I'm in. At like maybe 10 seconds into 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how does this happen? And then I hit the, I forget, like the terms and agreements. I pulled up the terms and agreements page instead of just clicking the button. So I thought for sure he got in and I didn't, but I just love that I'm fishing against this many people and the events that they do have around here. There is actually no boat tournament around here in an as amateur big. Series
mm-hmm.
that pays $10,000.
Right.
Or 10-5 actually.
Right.
So that to me is awesome. But plus the drama, like I noticed in kayak fishing, the amount of drama you're dealing with compared to being in a boat, like it's not even like, yeah, you get the person comes across the river and cuts you off. Go fish a boat tournament. I guarantee you fish five of them, and four out of five, you get cut off.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
By like less than 50 yards, and if a guy that ran 2 miles upriver and then just pulls in right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like there's a lot more respect in the kayak fishing community. And that's something that definitely has me sticking around.
Same here. And then I didn't really have any big boat tournament experience prior to getting into the kayaks, but that is one of the things that just kind of drew me into the kayak experience. Cause like, just like the guys from the kayak anglers group, I totally came in as, 100% didn't know at all what I was doing. And a bunch of those guys kind of took me under their wing and said, oh yeah, come out with us, and I'm like, hey, I don't want to mess you guys up. And they're like, no, you know, that's the whole point of this is to, get other people involved and to get people hooked on the sport. And, had it not been for them, I would probably be still struggling because I learned so much from, Mike and a bunch of the other guys as I kind of worked through that. And, it's definitely what kind of drew me in, that camaraderie that, is out there, and how, even though we're competing against each other, a lot of people, do help you out. They share tips. They let you go with them or, at least shadow them a little bit, and so, like I said, I've heard, kind of that the boat world was so much more cutthroat and, nasty and, horrible things. And that's the only thing that scares me about our sport, kayak angling growing as much as it is that I fear that could start creeping in. And you already do see a little bit of that drama with some of the bigger things. And, I remember Christine Fisher talking about, fishing in a group or, getting tips from other anglers, and she just had a big post about that. And when you hear that kind of thing, I think that's the kind of things that I'm afraid of with the way our sport is growing and how fast it is. But I guess it's kind of inevitable at some point. So
yeah, I was gonna say, no matter what, pretty much you're gonna have issues when there's money involved. Like
true.
It doesn't matter what it is. Honestly, I don't know any sport that doesn't have drama, but I just feel like as a whole, I think it's a lot less than, like, especially like going back to both. It is not the same. Like, you can pull into a launch and talk to people. There's people that don't even look at you, don't talk to you. And then as soon as the tournament starts, you pull into a spot and they're blowing your bank out or they're doing something. I'm sure it happened, but just that you're in plastic boats too, that which has a lot of help with not blowing banks out for sure, but there's definitely ways that you could screw things up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They joke about, the glitter boat guys, being, thinking they're so much better than us small guys in the plastic boats, but they can have their glitter boats all they want. I'm super happy in my little hunk of plastic. I'm the captain of my own ship basically. So
yeah, I need a glitter boat. I need a river boat. Well, I just need a glitter boat. And honestly, if you looked at my marketplace search history, there is a lot of glitter boats in that because I just want to go fish the big, big waters. Like this weekend heading to Lake Erie in a plastic boat, man, 10 to 20 mile per hour winds. Like there's a lot that can go wrong in those situations. And I've been to Lake Erie to catch walleye.
Okay.
I've never fished for a bass in Lake Erie. And I make bait with a guy who won some big tournaments in a boat, a little bit more than $10,500. So he definitely is. As soon as I'd seen that I qualified, I asked him, I'm like, hey man, like, can you tell me anything about this place? Cause I'm not going to pre-fish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go fish it. And it is what it is. He's like, well, this is what you got to do. And if this isn't working, go back across it because it's got to work. And that place is fishing extremely tough right now. Like there's people, I know somebody that was up there for a tournament. I overheard him at the boat tournament Sunday. He was up there for I think it was a state championship. He pre-fished for 4 days, caught 6 fish in those 4 days.
Wow.
So I don't know, maybe us kayak guys can show out on the boat guys this weekend, but
that'd be pretty sweet.
I can say I don't know about me.
Well, and that made me think, you know, as much as, you know, home field advantage might come into play, you know, if they have a tournament on waters that, you know, all it takes is something like, you know, this tornado or hurricane weather to make its way up the coast, and the places, you know, could get completely washed out. You know, that's the one thing about the Susquehanna. It doesn't take a ton of rain to get it unwieldy, you know, and when that happens and that goes through, it's almost an entirely different fishery, you know, the next week. It fishes completely different. You know, that's if it's even safe to be out there, you know, when there's friggin' trees and sheds floating by, then you know that's not the best time to be out there. But
yeah, I definitely don't. I've never been. Last year's state championship, it was at 11.3. That was the hot. That's Sunbury gauge too, which mm-hmm. Sunbury averages with rain normal summer, it's 9 feet mm-hmm. around there. But I was out in 11 feet, and that was definitely a little hairy. There was a lot of moving water, and my bright idea was to drop an anchor. Well, I don't get seasick, and I got seasick during that tournament because I'm sitting there doing this the whole day, and it got me. But now I actually prefer, if the river was to do anything, it could go back to that 11-foot mark.
Okay.
Because I understand it, whether it's high or low.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather be out there with it higher than lower. As being in a Hobie with a pedal drive standpoint, or like just more water to fish, like there's things that happen when you reach 10 and a half feet that don't happen I haven't seen it all year because mm-hmm. the river hasn't been there.
Right.
And my buddy's always asking me, he's like, when's that river gauge getting to 11 foot again? Cause we had one of the best days. We're both throwing spinner baits off the front of my boat, and we're just setting the world on fire. Like we fished 3 little eddies all day.
Wow.
And we were out all day long. But
was it high and clear, or was it like, usually when I was going to say, usually when it's like that, it's chocolate milk.
Yeah, no, I like that 6 foot or 6 inch visibility, 6 to a foot.
Gotcha.
That's a cool, because that opens up a lot of baits that you don't normally throw.
Mm-hmm. And would you consider yourself more of a power fisherman like that, or I'm definitely more finesse. I'm learning to some of the power techniques, but you give me a Ned rig, and I'm going to do probably better now. you know, crankbaiting. I've started to really like lipless cranks and stuff like that. Right now I did really well yesterday on a spook, and I hadn't thrown a spook forever. And I just happened to watch a YouTube video and I was like, I'm going to try this. And then the two biggest fish I caught yesterday were both on the spook. So
yeah, that's I definitely can throw both.
Like, okay. I think that makes you a well-rounded angler when you can slow down when you need to and really pick something apart. But if, you know, if the conditions are right and the power game is working, you know, if you can do both, I think that's definitely the best way.
Favorite wise?
Yeah.
I'm going power fishing. Like, okay. if I can throw any type of casting rod, whether I'm throwing topwater, spinner bait, jerk bait, like anything that I can throw with a casting rod, I'd prefer. But if I have to, yeah, I'm not afraid to finesse fish. That's last year, up until then, I only owned one casting rod. Now I don't even know how many I own. Like, I had spinning rods set up, like heavies for throwing a crankbait,
mm-hmm.
or like a jerk bait rod. Like, my buddy's like, hey, why don't you just buy another casting rod for this? And I'm like, and then I bought one. 2 weeks later, I bought another one. 3 weeks later, I bought my first Corrado DC.
Okay.
Now it's, I actually just bought another one today. So I don't even know how many. I bet you I have 18 to 23 casting rods and only 4 spinning rods.
Wow. See, I'm still probably more on the spinning rod end. Usually when I go out now, I take 4 spinning rods and 2 crankbait or 2 casting rods. One, you know, one's my crankbait rod and the other one is a heavy glass rod that I have. But I do have a few other. I finally got my first frogging rod early in the year, but I just don't use it that much on the river, to be honest. But I got that more for when I go to the lakes and stuff. But yeah, I'm kind of I'd say mid range now. Whereas before, you know, I was 100% spinning rod. I, you know, had that one bait caster that I bought on Amazon and could barely throw. But I've definitely progressed my game a little bit. But then I still look at like Jeff Little. I watch a lot of his videos, and he's throwing a lot of his stuff on spinning rods. So I'm like, you know what? There are definitely people who are successful using spinning rods, but you know, I do like to broaden my horizons, and I got my first SLX DC, and that really made a big difference. And I still can't skip a casting rod to save my life. If I'm skipping, that's going to have to be with a spinning rod, because I'll bird's nest a bait caster every time I try to skip it. But I just lost video on you, Jordan. I'm not sure what happened there, but you still there?
Yes, I can still hear you. It's work stuff that.
Gotcha. Well, I'm trying to think, is there anything else that you think, if you were trying to give some tips to a beginning angler, what you would tell them about kind of getting ready for a tournament, or, you know, how do you approach, like, what baits you're going to throw? Just more because it's what you know and your experience, or do you really kind of change it up depending on what the river's kind of saying to you?
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Whoop, did I lose you completely? bear with me, folks. We're having a little technical difficulties. There we go. I can hear you again, Jordan. There you are. Welcome back. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. So I don't know if you heard my last question, but I was just asking if... Okay. So if there was anything that you could, any advice you could give to a beginning angler, what would you tell them?
Just go out and get out of your comfort zone. That's really something big that I learned very quick when I got into tournament fishing. Whether you're against a certain bait, you don't want to fish a certain way, or you're afraid, like in my shoes, I still have a hard time, like I said, leaving the Susquehanna River because I just don't want to leave something I'm comfortable with. And like, if you're going, like a beginning angler, yeah, you want to be on your home water, your most familiar, but you never know. You might do better on something you maybe don't have any time at all spent on. And it's you, every time you go out, whether you win or lose, it's a learning experience. You gain,
absolutely,
you gain something that will help you in the future, or you meet somebody that can also help you in the future. You start hanging around good people and that are good at fishing, and eventually one day you're going to be one of those good people and the beginners are going to want to hang out with you. I definitely, the people I've met in kayak fishing, is they're all awesome. It's great to even just talk to him, not even about fishing. I can talk to Ryan Lambert literally about anything and everything. And most of the time it's hunting. Or just absolutely irrelevant stuff. And it's easy to do. But I
know what you're saying. To me, when I give people advice, especially when it comes to tournaments, I'm like, just, you know, even if you don't think you're going to do great, just do it, A, because it kind of forces you to fish water that might be out of your comfort zone. Like, there are so many places that I fish through kayak anglers and other tournaments like that that I never would have fished otherwise, just because I wouldn't drive that far, you know, not when I can drive 15 minutes to the Susquehanna and fish someplace I know, you know. Whereas, you know, some of the places that we fish for kayak anglers, it's 2 hours, 2.5 hours away from me. You know, the northernmost kind of reaches of our tournaments. And so I think just for that fact alone, it kind of forcing you to fish waters that you don't know and aren't familiar with, I think to me was one of the best reasons why I kind of talked myself into it and really started going. But like you said, meeting the people that you meet and the knowledge you get through that too is almost worth it alone.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, man. Well, we're hit the 50 minute mark. So I think that was, you know, we covered a bunch of topics there and I think that's pretty good. I wanted to give you a chance to shout out if you have any sponsors or anybody, any products that you, you know, you love to support or anything like that. And also social media, if you have anything.
Just anybody looking into hand-poured soft plastics, we make a tube it's not your molded tube. It's made out of a better plastic because you can't inject the tubes with the same plastic that are hand-dipped. They're scented. That's sneakyhollowbaits.com. And we make tubes, drop shot baits, Senkos, all kinds of stuff like that. And I'm forgetting a lot because I'm not good at going off the top of my head. But
sorry to put you under pressure like that. But we'll include a link in the show notes for sure so the listeners can go and check that out. That way you don't have to remember everything. Guys, just make sure you check out the show notes for the show. And we'll include a link to to the Sneaky Yalo baits there, and we'll make sure you guys get some coverage there if that works.
That will do.
All right. Anything else you want to shout out?
Nope. That's pretty much it.
All right, man. Well, we'll see. I'll run into you if I happen to fish the native event. Still tossing that around, but if I don't, good luck to you. I can't wait to hear how you did, and we'll keep in touch and see. You know, maybe we'll have to have you back on, and you can talk about your experiences there as well.
Okay, we'll talk about it after.
Yep. Yeah, that way we're not dishing any secrets or anything. So, well, again, Jordan, I appreciate you coming on with me tonight. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward again to getting back out on the water with you sometime. So,
you also.
All right, man. Well, guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs, where we bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. You guys have a good night, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents, anywhere, anytime, and on any device.